Well, hello, everyone. Wow, don't overdo it. That's enough. That's plenty. I don't need a lot of affirmation. Wow. Christian and I spend a lot of our summer, Andy will be in a couple of weeks, with teenagers. And I was just saying that it's just so, we're just jumping into adult world now. You know, kids, they're just crazy. They clap for anything. You can bring out a bag of Doritos and they go crazy, you know, so. Just trying to get into adult world today, and because I am one, just turned 50, along with your lovely pastor. He probably didn't mention that when he did, but happened to both of us. Isn't that awesome that I could say that? And I just want to say, since Andy's sitting right here in front of me, he mentioned last week and again this week that with a team of friends, Shelly and I are planning a church in Atlanta, and I'm just glad that's kind of out. It's sort of out a little ahead of when we wanted it to be, not because of Andy. In fact, Andy was the first person I told about this stirring that God was doing in my heart. I started out about, some of you probably can identify with this, not in terms of planning a church, but about 25 years ago, I started on this ministry road, and I just kind of had this thought, I'm probably not going to ever be a pastor of a church. And you should never have one of those thoughts, you know, because God has great plans for us. And it took me a long time to sort of come around to where he was. In the last few years, Shelly and I have really been making some strides with him and really sensing in our hearts that that's what God wanted us to do. And so I shared that with Andy about this time last summer. And I'm pretty sure Andy didn't tell anybody, but some other people told everybody. And so it's kind of out there now. We don't know a whole lot about it, other than some friends of ours are in town to help us with this venture. We don't know anything beyond that, except that God has a great plan for us. And I just want to say publicly, just so I hope everybody's okay with it, because Andy and I seem to be okay with it, and it'd be good if everybody was okay with what we're okay with, but some people seem to not be. But Shelly and I were at the very first service ever for North Point Community Church at the Cobb Galleria. Anybody at the Cobb Galleria on service number one? Okay, so come on. That's like five people in the building right now. That's amazing. See, we raise them up here and then launch them out to the world. And apparently they've all gone out to the whole world, all the rest of them. But we were there on day one, have been part of this journey of watching God do what he's done here, which is mind-boggling. In this city and around the world. And Andy, if I think you probably know this, but I've told him this privately on many occasions, and I've said it publicly before, but he's the best leader I know, period, on planet Earth, of a company, of an organization, of a church, of anything that you can lead. He's the best leader I've ever been around. And it's not really weird for me to think that I might be leading a church in Atlanta. It's just that, you know, you're always going to be compared to him. And so that's kind of a no-win situation to start with. But, you know, God loves us all, and we all have grace for those kinds of journeys. But I think it's kind of cool that we met in sixth grade when his dad came to be the pastor of the church that I grew up going to. And most of you know this story, but I just love telling it. At youth camp, they put us little sixth graders in with the seniors. And I'm telling you, you fear for your mortal safety. You know, I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, getting, you know, some things done to you. I'm talking about extinction. You know, you think there's a point that they could take you out. And a big thing broke out in the cabin, and I was all of about 68 pounds. And so I went under the bunk bed and up in the corner, and there was this other little kid under the bunk bed when I got under there. No, true story. And we just kind of like looked at each other under the bunk bed, and it's like, okay, we're going to make it, the two of us, you know, together we're 140 pounds, you know, and we're going to make it. And it's pretty cool to me to think that from there, all those years ago, up to now, that it might be possible that we lead churches in the same city with the same story, same message, same Jesus, same kingdom, same world that needs to hear about the love of God. And so that's a beautiful thing, and hopefully God will open the door for that to happen. And it could be really, really awesome. So we'll see how it goes. I don't know anything, like I said, about all the details about this thing yet, but I do know something about it. And I know a whole lot about what God has done here. And that's really the heartbeat of what I think God wants to say to us this morning. And it is what's at the core of what we're about to do and what has already been happening here and is happening here right now while we're here together. And it is a very phenomenal word. And we already sang it this morning, and it's been sung many, many times, probably the best known song in the whole world among people who are inside church and outside church. And it's true this morning again that the only right descriptor that goes before the word grace is amazing. And when you put amazing there, you almost want to take amazing away from every other thing that we put amazing in front of. But at the heart of whatever it is that God's leading us toward, and with the heart of what we're doing this morning, and what ought to, be at the heart of every vibrant church that's worshiping Jesus Christ anywhere on the planet today, is this amazing thing called grace, because grace is it's the thing that describes us, changes us, and distinguishes us from everything else on earth that has to do with God. It's this word called grace, and it really is amazing. And my prayer today for me and for you is that we will continue to get it more. You know, when you move from that place of, I've heard about it and I kind of understand it, to, I get it. I don't know if you've ever moved there at anything about life before, but when you really get it and you start driving your wife crazy or your husband crazy or your kids crazy or your coworkers crazy because you got it, whether it was tennis that you got or how to fix a work email and you got it finally, and you're telling people, I get it, I know how to do it now, or you texted for the very first time and you were like, whoa, I'm texting, and you got it, you know, you'd been hearing about texting, you tried it once on an older phone, but it didn't work, but now you're texting and you get it, and now everybody gets texts from you like all day, how's it going, driving to work, traffic's bad, you know, and it's like, please stop texting, you know, but you got it. Something happened at work and you just didn't understand it in school. I'll never forget those days for me when I got it for the first time, you know, second time through algebra, you can get it the second time through. And I'll never forget going, oh, that's how it works. I get it now. And everybody else either has gotten it and they're like, finally, or they don't get it yet. And they're just, you're driving them crazy because you do. And you're watching high definition TV. They're watching some low-grade regular television, and you're both watching Dancing with the Stars, but you're really getting it, and they're really not, and you're frustrated by them, because you are. That's the kind of church, because we're all in process here today. Everybody here, me and you, are in process. And at various levels, we get it. But the goal is that we're all moving toward high-definition television. And even the little things that come on before the show, you go, wow, that was cool. And some of you don't know what I'm talking about. I rewind a little credit thing that happened because it was so beautiful. Because I used to have this old-timey TV. I just got high def, you can tell. So sorry to just join the party, but, you know, budgets were tight. But anyway, it's amazing grace. And I don't know if you've just heard about it, or if you actually could talk a little bit about it, or if you get it. And it turned into high-definition wow for you. And you know more than anything else today that it is for you and it has changed your life. I want to paint a picture this morning, if I can, and I want to tell a story. And then next week, we're going to kind of bring this thing home. And I don't know how to say this any other way, but please, if you don't like today, please come back and give next week a chance, because I think it's the most important thing that I'm carrying right now. And what I'm going to share with you next week is really, 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 really amazing grace. And so we'll kind of end there next week. But this morning, I just want to paint a picture and tell a story. And the picture is a wow picture, okay? And I told you I've been with teenagers. What they would do is they would speak out loud at this point. I know you will just speak in your hearts, but I'll assume that it was out loud. But this is crazy stuff, okay? Here's the picture. Are you ready for the picture? This is crazy. Where we're starting today is with a picture. I got to set the scene for you, okay? It's crazy, the scene. Are you ready for it? Okay, so you know, I'm setting the scene. It's like here we are in a faraway land in a castle. You know how you set a scene to tell a story. So here's the picture. You ready? In this picture, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is standing on planet Earth. See, not a lot of teenagers here this morning, you know. That's the picture. Around him, that's a wow, by the way. Around him are a group of people, and it describes them at the opening of this chapter we're going to read. There were the tax gatherers, and everyone would boo at that point because they're the worst. I mean, in this culture, they're worse than in our culture. In our culture, they shouldn't even be bad because they're doing such a, well, in some, I'll forget that. And I don't want to go there. And they were bad people in this culture. And then it says the tax gatherers and the sinners had gathered around Jesus and were listening to him. Okay, so that's an amazing picture we're studying right there. We've got God on planet Earth. Emmanuel is what he's called. That means God is with us. God came down. God came for us, to us, in human form, his son Jesus Christ, standing on the planet. And around him, drawing into him, is not like the Sunday school crowd. It's the worst people are drawing into him. Okay, is anything wrong with the story so far? Because you're thinking if Jesus Christ, God, came on the earth, then the tax gatherers would bolt and the sinners would scatter. They'd be like, oh man, that's God in a human body. I'm getting out of here. No, they drew into him. They gathered around him and they were listening to Jesus. Something about him really registered with them. Imagine that. Now, that's just a crazy picture. Oh, there's one more part of the picture. And the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were there. And I love the tension that always is built in the New Testament because these guys always show up on the fringes. The Pharisees, if you don't know who they were just a religious set. They were the ones who had started on a good journey with God because he gave 10 commandments. They turned it into about 2,000 by now. And they had all these rules and all this stuff and all the ways you had to make your life acceptable to God. And the law, the teachers of the law, they were the ones walking around making sure everybody was doing it just right all the time. And they were doing it right and you had to do it right. And the tax collectors, man, they didn't even have a prayer with these guys. They were not on the radar screen. There was not an outreach mission for the Pharisees. They didn't have a seeker service for the Pharisees on Thursday night. I mean, the Pharisees didn't have a seeker service for the tax gatherers on Thursday night. They'd written them off already. They had written off the sinners already. They were just trying to keep themselves on the path toward God, and they didn't care about anybody else. And there they all were, and standing right in the middle of them is the Son of God. But the Pharisees were murmuring with the teachers of the law. It's always people murmuring wherever church happens. And it's often over the sinners and the tax gatherers because they're sitting in my chair. They're clogging up the parking lot. And here's what they were saying, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were saying about the tax gatherers and the sinners. They said, it's amazing. This guy seems to like the sinners. And they like him, and I've heard he'll even eat with them. And they just couldn't believe it. They murmured to each other, this man welcomes sinners, and he even eats with them. And as they murmured, Jesus is there. And of course, he hears their murmuring and knew their thoughts before they murmured. In fact, if you'd ever want your thoughts to be written in the New Testament, just think them in front of Jesus. And it's a chance they'll actually make it into one of these stories. And so Jesus has got the scene set. He's got all this crazy rabble around him, these partying wild people. He's got the tax crowd there. And he's got all the law keepers there, and they're all looking at him, basically. And he says, okay, well, I'll go now. And he tells a series of stories. And the third story he tells is probably the most well-known story of church. And you probably know something about this story, even if you haven't been around church much. It begins, if you'll look with me, in Luke 15, where the stories are, in verse 11. And right above it, in the margin, is the title of the story. Now, you know the title of the story wasn't written by the writer of the New Testament. He didn't title each of the stories as we went along. That was added later for attention deficit people like me and you, who just, and people who, you know, wanted to find the stories a little bit easier. And so he added at the top of this one, the story or the parable of, in my translation says, the lost son. Some translations say of the prodigal son. And so that's the name of this story. So this story has been told to me since I went to Vacation Bible School all the way up through youth camp, heard it spoken many times as an adult, and it's the story of the prodigal son. So it's a story about a son, basically, according to the guy who wrote in the margin. But let's just hold on to that thought this morning and see if that's really what the story is about. But here's how the story unfolds. If you haven't heard it, it goes like this. And it's all about amazing grace. Jesus continued. So he's already told two stories about lost things and found things. And then he comes to this one. He says, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So the father divided his property between the two of them. Now, that's a whole nother thing that I don't really want to spend a lot of time on this morning, but it's kind of crazy what happened here. And basically, I know you've never thought a thought like this, but what this son was thinking was, I know when I die, I'm getting a bunch of stuff from my dad. And so, have you ever had a thought like this? Like some of you have parents of means and you know there's something out there for you, but you're kind of thinking in your mind, I don't know if you're thinking bad thoughts. I know this is terrible to even say out loud. You're not thinking bad thoughts. You're just thinking sometime down there, like when you did the house deal and the other deal, you're thinking, well, this might be tight for a while, but you know, I know there's that thing coming down there eventually and maybe some of that over there. And in your mind, did you ever one time anybody here entertain a thought like, I don't want anything bad to happen to you, but what if instead of the money sitting in there earning interest right now, if I just had it right now? That would kind of be cool if I just went ahead and got it now, because see, I need it now. I don't know if I'm going to need it then, but I really know I need it now. So would it be terrible if I just got it now? You've never had that thought? Well, he had that thought. He thought, you know, if I could just get my hands on it here, could be a good thing. So the father said, okay. And he didn't just give the younger son his half of the inheritance. He gave both sons their half. He said, you get half and you get half. So two kids got a load on the same day. And then the story goes on. And I love this next verse, verse 13. Not long after that, how long do you think it was after that? 45 minutes, an hour? Not long after that, I think it was pretty quick because I think a lot of calculating had been going on in the mind of this son for a long time. The younger son got together all of he had. He set out for a distant country and there he squandered his wealth in wild living. And after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to the citizen of that country. This plan started out good, but it was starting to fall apart by now. He hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. And there he longed to fill his stomach with what the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. In his mind, he had this brilliant escape plan about how life was gonna be. And it started out strong, I'm sure, and the parties were great as long as he had the cash flowing, but eventually he blew through all of his money. Times in that country, which he didn't plan on, usually in your runaway plan, a few things happen that you don't plan on. And he hadn't planned a famine in his runaway plan. And things got tough in the whole country. And so now here he is, hungry and feeding these pigs. And so look what happens in verse 17. So when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And I'm here starving to death. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. Now, normally that's the message. That's the talk. And it's kind of under this whole thing of, I know you're out in a distant land and I don't know where you are in the building this morning, but we're here for you today and God's here for you today and we want you to come home today. If it was the church I grew up in, we would sing either Just As I Am or Have Thine Own Way, Lord, or Jesus is tenderly calling, come home, come home. And we'll sing a verse or two or 12 or 40 verses. We'll sing enough verses until you come home today. So that's what we're going to do this morning. If you've been in the faraway land, this is your morning. The choir's going to come and lead us. I'll be down here at the front. We'll sing until 4:30 if we have to. Somebody's coming home today. And that's the kind of the whole message, really. If you're in the faraway land, come home. That's really not where we're going this morning. That's not to say that there aren't runaways here today, and it's not a serious deal. I'm not belittling the faraway land at all. I mean, this is a big room full of a lot of people, and there are a lot of runaways in this room. And some of you run away from your wife, some of you run away from your husband, from your kids, from your job, from your family, from responsibility. You've tried to run from your past, run from yourself. And you're way out in nowhereville right now. And like this son, there's a period of time coming where you have to come to terms with how your plan's working out. And if it's working out great, like you thought it was going to work out, then awesome. You just stay with that plan. But if it's not working out quite like you thought it was going to work out, and some unexpected things that you didn't factor in have happened, and you found yourself in a place that you don't know how you even got there, but it was not where you went when you headed out in the first place, then coming to your senses, waking up, assessing the situation, and making a big turn of heart, that's a really great idea. But this morning is really more about, this morning is, people who've already made that turn. This morning is about people who've come to that place. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they said, I've had enough of this, and I'm heading home again. Has anybody been there? Anybody know anything about what I'm talking about? I've had enough of this, and I'm heading back home. I'm making a big, huge turn for home. That's really who this morning is all about, because something really crazy happened once this son said, I'm heading for home. Now, he had a plan the whole time, and we read what his plan is. Look what it is. It's right here in verse 17. He said, the hired servants at my dad's house have food to spare, and I'm starving. So verse 18, I'm going to go back to him, and I'm going to say to him, and here comes his three-point plan. You ready? Point number one. First thing I'm going to say, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. He came to this realization that I just didn't make a mistake. I've sinned against you. I have injured you and wounded you. I've wounded heaven. It's just not about me and you, Dad. I've injured heaven. He somehow felt something with God and something with man. He said, point two, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. So that was the second part of his speech. I'm going to tell him right up front, Dad, I know I'm not worthy to be called your son. You say, well, what does that mean exactly? It means in this culture that when you say to your dad, I want my half of the money, you're saying to your dad, die. Just die. Die right now to me and give me the money. And when the son walked out the door with the bags, it was to the father in this culture like the son died. If a son ever came in this culture to his dad and said, Dad, I'm leaving home, I'm bolting, I'm out of here, I'm gone, the dad would say, you are no longer my son, our relationship is over, a fracture has happened here that can't be repaired, don't ever come back, don't ever speak my name again, and I will never speak your name again. It's over between me and you. So the son's carrying that understanding. He knows going back and saying, hey, Dad, what do you think? That's not an option for him, but he's got an idea here. I know I'm not worthy to be called your son. I know I've sinned against heaven and against you. But here's my closer. Here's my third big point. If you'll just take me back as a servant, just a servant, that's all I'm asking. I'm not asking to be in the house. I'm not asking for my room back. I'm not asking to be at the family meals. I'm not coming to Christmas. I just want to be on the property. I'll be a servant because your servants are better off than me. Just let me be a servant. That was his plan on his terms of how he could get back into a better place of life. And here he comes, and he doesn't know what he's going to get. He doesn't know what he's going to get. He doesn't know if he's going to get the finger. He doesn't know if he's going to get the hand. It's way too late. He doesn't know if he's going to get the arms. You ever get those? He doesn't know if the door's bolted, and he knocks and he bangs and he hits and nothing. And finally a servant comes around after about 3 hours of that and says, ain't nobody coming to the door. He doesn't know if he's going to get the hoops. You know the hoops? Oh, so you're coming back. He don't know if there's a checklist. I mean, maybe Dad is there with the checklist. I mean, that's what should happen, right? He comes rolling up to the house, and Dad says, well, look who's back. Hey, everybody, would you look who finally made it home? Boy, he's looking good. Man, what happened to you? Didn't work out so good, I don't guess. All the plans didn't. And maybe you think he's got the checklist, and it's going to be all right. So you want to come back. Interesting. All right. Well, let's start with number one. First, you're going to say a few things to me and your mother and your brother and each of the servants and your aunts, uncles, cousins, second cousins, nieces, nephews. Second, and you're thinking, I'm going to show up there and it's going to be a while. Maybe it's going to be probationary period. Maybe we'll ease you into the low level servant quarter, and we'll see how that goes for 3 months and see what you really got. And then maybe we'll move you into the upper servant quarter, and maybe eventually you'll get full servant status here, but it's going to be a lot of payback is going to happen here. And so this kid is coming down a road with a speech in his back pocket, and he's rehearsing it over and over and over in his mind. I've sinned against heaven and against you, Dad. I'm not worthy to be called your son, and I know that, but if you will please just let me be a servant, just let me be one of the servants, that's all I'm asking. Just let me on the property, Dad. That's all I'm asking. And here he comes with his plan, and he's coming back on his terms. In his mind, do you understand what I'm saying? This is the key part of today. In his mind, he's already decided what the situation's going to be like, and he's already in his mind determined what the terms are by which he's going to get to come back. And he knows it's a long list, but he's okay with it. He's like, give me the list. I know it's a bunch of stuff, but I'll get busy working on it. If that's what it takes, I'm prepared for that. It's like when a lot of us come back and we come through the door and we're just happy to be on the property again. And we say to God, I know that I've injured my relationship with you and with a bunch of other people. And that's not a bad thing to say. I know I'm not worthy to be called your son or your daughter. And that's not a bad thing to say either. And then we've got our plan. And God, I'll do anything. I'll make up anything. I'll work on the parking lot committee. I'll go to Upstreet. I'll go to Wambalana. I'll change diapers. I'll do anything. I'll go on a mission trip. I'll give somebody whatever you want me to do, God. I'll do that because I'm just happy to be on the property, and I'll do the list if that's what it takes to make it all up to you. And he comes back with this plan, and something crazy happens right in that moment. And so here he comes. He got up and went to his father, verse 20, but then the music kind of rises a little bit and something completely changes here. But while he was still a long way off, what does that mean? Well, he was still way down the road. You know, he's not on the porch beating on the door. He's still coming from a distance. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And so all of a sudden, he just freaked out, didn't think, didn't pre-calculate what he was about to do, and did an unthinkable thing in this culture. He just bolted towards his son. He took off and started running towards his son. So, okay, you got a kid with a speech in his back pocket, and now you got dad coming off the front porch in a full sprint. I don't know how old dad is. I don't know if it's a good idea for him to be sprinting or not, but something's just taken over, and he's running. He sees him a long way off. It makes me wonder if somebody hasn't tipped the dad off. You're not going to believe this, but I saw your kid the other day, and he was in such and such a town, and I think he thinks he's coming back. Word back to the dad. And so the dad says, really? And so dad gets up where he can see every day, and he's watching the direction he heard he was coming from. And when he sees the top of his head come over the hill, he says, that's him right there. And he just starts running towards his son. That's an amazing picture. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and started kissing him. Okay, huge shocker, I think, for the son who's thinking, I might get a servant at the gate. Can you let me in the gate? No, you're not coming in this gate. We've been told if you ever show up here again, you're not coming through the gate. So no, you're not coming through the gate. But if you got through the gate, can you ask my dad if he'll come out? I'll go check with your dad and see if he can come out. He's prepared for a couple of steps and a couple of extra rehearsals right before the big moment comes. And all of a sudden now a shadow starts coming, getting closer and closer. A man's after him. It's my dad that's after me. Oh no, he's going to come and beat the heck out of me right here on the road. He's coming with such fury. He's like, there he is right there. I'm coming. And as he gets closer and closer and closer, his arms grab this kid. He sweeps him up off the ground. He starts twirling him around the air. And he says, whoa. And he starts kissing on this boy. This boy smells, stinks, is covered, mucky, yucky, tattered, worn down, bruised, ugly. And he's hugging him, kissing him. He's gonna have Purell out, going, hang on, son, I gotta, you know, sanitize here because I don't know what kind of pigs you've been with. No, he's just all over this boy. And the boy's like, got his speech back here, and he's like, I gotta get the speech out. And I don't know how this unfolded. This is where you just have to fill in the lines. I don't know how far away from the house they were. I don't know how close they got to the house. But the next part of the house, the dad spoke to his servants. So they either ran with him down the road, like the servants said, come on, we don't know how this is going down. And all the servants ran, or he grabbed the kid and started carrying the kid back to the house. But at some point, the kid, because he had a plan, and he knew how it was going to go down, he must have pushed his dad back just enough to say, Dad, chill out. I got to say some things. Dad, I've sinned against heaven and against you. That was part one of his plan. Dad, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. That's part two of his plan, but he was banking on what part of his plan? Part three. That was the only shot he had, was part three. And so he says to his dad, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son, part two. And then, I love this, it's the end of verse 21. I'll just read the whole verse again. And then the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and you. Number one, check it off. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And here comes the money part. Here comes the way. Here comes my predetermined plan. I've already figured this out, how me and God are going to get back together, how me and dad are going to get back together. I've already got an idea here, like a lot of us have when we come back to God, about how it's going to go down. And look what happens when he gets to part three, the big money part of his speech. But who knew? That's the best conjunction that could go right there. The father butted in to the plan. Don't you love that? The father just said, so hang on right here. I don't know if he put his hand over his mouth. Dads can do that. I don't know if he just started talking so loud that nobody could hear the son anymore. But the recorder of this story didn't hear the third part of the speech and the plan come out. Because when he said, I've sinned against heaven and earth, that part I think needed to come out. And for me to God, that needs to come out. God, I have sinned against you. I'm no longer to be worthy to be called your son. That came out, and I think between me and God, that needs to come out too. But the whole, now I've figured out, God, how you are going to be able to take me back. God doesn't think that part needs to come out because he's already figured that part out. And so in the story, the father puts his hand out, stops the son, starts talking, and before the third part can come out, the father said to his servants, I love it. It's like, I got it. I've heard all I need to hear. In fact, I had heard all I need to hear when I saw your head come over the top of the hill back there. And he turns to his servants and he says, all right, here's what's going to happen. I got a new plan. He had a plan, but I have a plan. He's been thinking about his speech and I've been thinking about my party. He's been thinking about what he's going to say to me and I've been thinking about how much we're going to celebrate tonight. He's been thinking about being a servant, and I've been thinking, man, we've been saving that calf for about, 6 months now, and he is fat and ready, and we are going to celebrate. And as soon as he gets here, the party is on. We had two colliding plans going on here. And the father's plan was, he said to his servants, quick, in other words, let's do it, brothers. It's not a probationary period. I don't even want to hear the details. I just see in your eyes that you've had enough, and I can see on your face that you are coming home, and that's enough for me. Quick. And then he said to his servants, get one of the servants' robes. No. Get one of my old robes. No. Bring what? Bring the best robe. Get the best one we've got and get it right now. Hurry. Robe guy takes off. He's bolting. Robe guy's like, oh, best robe? Woo! He's out of there. Next guy says, and put a ring on his finger. So what does that mean exactly? Ring? Where do we get a ring? I mean, is the jewelry store open? Or has the dad already thought, here's the ring. Ring is on hand. If he shows up here, you have the ring. Put it on his finger. And the guy didn't go, put ring, oh, ring. He's like, I got it. I'm here. I'm ready. Put it on there. We'll wash his hands first. Should we shower before we put the ring on his hand? Should we clean his fingernails and all the goop that's under them? Should we cut his fingernails before we put? No, put the ring on his finger. What ring? The family ring that has my crest and seal on it that says this is mine. Put it on his finger. Put shoes on his feet and bring the fattened calf and kill it. There were two people that weren't real happy to see the son coming home. And one was the older brother because he was Mr. Goody Two Shoes and the do-gooder. And that's not a bad thing. You don't have to go be wild all your life to get grace, but you can't stay home and be a do-gooder all your life and get grace either. At some point, you have to realize we're all in the same boat with God if you're going to get grace, and that nobody's good, no, not one. There is none righteous, no, not one. We have all sinned and come short of the glory of God. Both brothers in the house, out of the house, we're in deep trouble because of our sin nature. So the older brother, though, he was a do-gooder, and he'd never gone to the far country, and he'd taken all of his half of the inheritance, and he had invested it very well. And so he wasn't real happy that this whole thing was going down. But the other person that wasn't real happy, or wasn't a person, but the fatted calf was not real happy at all. I think as soon as he saw the kid coming, he was like, oh no, this looks like a big party happening and I think I'm gone, you know? And so they got the ring, the robe, the shoes, they're going to kill the fatted calf. And then the father says, let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and he is alive again. That whole thing of he's gone and I'm dead and he's dead and our relationship is so fractured it will never be put back together again. He was dead, but he's alive again. He was lost and he is now found. So they begin to celebrate. And that's why I think, by the way, this story is called the story of the prodigal father. If they'd hired me to write the little captions in between the stories, I would have said this is the parable of the prodigal father. You know why? Because I am inquisitive, and I went and looked up prodigal in the dictionary. And I was almost certain that it was going to say wayward, wasteful, rebellious, partier. And I have a picture of this kid in there. And I looked up prodigal, and guess what? That's not what it said. You know what the definition of prodigal is? The two main definitions of prodigal? Excessive and lavish. That's what prodigal is. Excessive, lavish. Now, was the son excessive? Absolutely. Was his partying lavish? Absolutely. Was his rebellion excessive? Absolutely. But who's the most excessive person in this story? Who's the most lavish person in this story? It's the father. His grace, the most excessive thing in the story. His capacity to have compassion, the most excessive thing in the story. His ability to forgive, the most excessive thing in the story. His willingness to bring a son back who was dead, who had insulted him to his face. That's lavish. That's outpouring. That's giving everything above and beyond. So the story here, the son is awesome and we're in the story, but it's really not a story about us. It's really a story about him. It's a story about a father. And I don't know what father means to you. Maybe father meant to you all those other things, the finger, the hand, the arms folded, the door bolted, the list, the hoops, the what you got to do. Maybe your dad, it was a fist coming through that little box that, you know, they open in olden times and say, who is it? And when you knocked on the door and said, hey, is there any? Bam, is what you got outside the door. I don't know what kind of father you would be expecting on the other end of your speech. And I don't know what kind of God you were thinking about when something in your heart said, I've had enough. And there's got to be something more. And I'm heading towards the one who made me. I don't know what kind of God you were expecting on the other side of your speech. And I don't know what kind of terms that you had set for your reconnection to him. But I'd like to say this morning, the story is really about him and about how excessive he is in mercy, grace, compassion, and forgiveness, and about how eager he is to throw a party for you. And it is not enough for him for you just to be on the property. He wants you to be in his arms. And he's willing to put him around you right where you are. That's why they call it amazing grace. There's always tension that's been, it's been building since I started talking. As soon as I started talking about the tax gatherers and the sinners, tension started building. And it's in the room right now, so I'm going to talk about it out loud. There's two kinds of tension in here right now. There's tension in here by some of us who are going, that's too easy. That's way too easy. Come on. You don't just go blow it, live wild, do your thing, party it up, and then just show up one day to God and everything's all right. That's way too easy. You know, there are consequences, Louie, and there's stuff you got to deal with, and there's something called, you know, retribution and there's justice and all these things. And so there's a whole group of people, and the brother was in that camp. He's going, what are the terms? What's he going to have to do? I don't know. Your dad interrupted him right in the middle of his speech and said, we're throwing a party tonight and celebrating him. And the brother's like, you got to be kidding me. It's too easy. But then there's a whole nother group of people. Those are the people I really felt the most heart for coming today. And those are the people over here that say, that's just too much. It's just too much. I don't think I could ever really have a robe or have a ring or have shoes or have a party. Not for me, not with what I've done, not my past, not my story, not where I've been. It's too much. And you've been here. You've been here week after week. You are a part. You've joined. You've said yes to Jesus. You're on it. You're volunteering somewhere. You're in the place. You've sung the songs today. You have a Bible. You're trying to grow. You're going to go to the box back there and tell your story. You're into the thing. But in your heart of hearts, it's like, I've never really danced yet. I've never really cut loose and said, whoa, there's music playing. There's a party going on. There's a feast. And it's for me. Whoa, this is crazy. I'm back. I'm a son. I'm a daughter. I'm loved. I'm embraced. I'm in the house. I'm not in the servant quarters. I'm in with God. We are forever reunited. I am fully accepted, fully forgiven, fully embraced, fully His right here and right now. And that's what God is saying to us this morning. That it's not just enough to be home. You get it when you know that you're home free. And to the people who think it's too easy, and to those of us who think it's too much, I direct your attention to the storyteller. Not me, I'm not the storyteller. I'm retelling the story. The storyteller was named Jesus, Son of God, standing in a crowd of do-gooders and do-batters, not to tell stories, but to live a life of perfection that He could lay down for the sins of the whole world. And He looks at the two easy people and He says, oh, you think it's too easy for the father to run and meet the son or the daughter on the road and throw his arms around them? You think that's too easy? Would you just stick with me for a couple of more months and you watch what I go through and then you tell me if you think it's too easy? Because I've come here to do the hardest thing that's ever been done on earth. And to the people who say it's too much, it's too much, it's too much, I should just stand on the fringes and be happy that I'm even inside the building, Louis, with what I've done. I direct you to the storyteller who has scars in his hands and his feet. And He says to you, you were dead, but I made you alive. You were lost. I came to find you, and I paid the price to restore you to God. And it was all by grace. That's what God can do. For it is by grace that you have been saved. And that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not as a result of works that no one should boast, for we are His workmanship, created in Christ for good works that God has prepared beforehand that we should live and walk in them. And I just want to invite anybody this morning that you got back on the property, but there's a robe waiting for you. The best robe is waiting for you. You got back on the property, but there's a ring waiting for you that says, I belong to God and He belongs to me. I am His. There are shoes for your feet and there's music playing. And it's a celebration and not really of you. The party is thrown because of you. But even in the middle of the party, everybody is celebrating Him. Because who could be more lavish than a God who would come to us where we are and love us where we are so that He could make us everything He ever dreamed that we could be? It's possible for every one of us. It's amazing. Grace. Next week, we're going to look at a modern day story that opens up this in an incredibly beautiful and powerful way. And I look forward to seeing you then. God, thank you so much. Jesus, thank you. We are moved today that you stood on the planet to tell this story, that you walked on this earth to give your life. And God, we do pray for runaways today. We've all been one. But we pray more for people today who just need to know that God's not happy that you're just in the building. God's only going to be happy when you're in his embrace and his arms are around you and you feel his lips on your neck kissing you and telling you, I love you, daughter. I love you, son. You were dead. You were alive. You were lost. You were found. You are here. We are together. Let's have a celebration. And that grace could unlock in us the freedom to receive it. That's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.